Relationships Under Construction invites you to attend their annual fundraising banquet on Thursday, April 21st at the Villa Milano. Relationships Under Construction teaches middle and high school students healthy relationships based on virtue, not physical intimacy. Help Relationships Under Construction reach more youth with the truth about relationships. To register for the Relationships Under Construction's banquet on April 21st, go to relationshipsunderconstruction.com.
It's not over even when you think it's over. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Good to be back with you here in the studio, here in my interesting under-construction studio here in Newark, Ohio.
Yes.
And you in your humble and comfortable abode that's already not under construction in Gallipolis. So...
Mine is always under some form of remodeling or fixing or editing or changing somehow.
That's called home ownership. Yeah.
Even if it's just moving the furniture around.
Right. That's called home ownership. Unfortunately, we all are involved in that all the time.
That's right.
So.
That's right. Well, Chuck, you know, I'm glad that we're able to tape today because just this week earlier, Ohio went through a version of the silly season. I hope most of our listeners exercised their franchise in order to go and cast their ballot for those individuals whom they felt would best represent their interests in elected office, because there were a number of offices up on the ballot. And remember, folks, most of these were casting to say who you would pick as a nominee to carry on into the general election in November. Only on a small handful of votes were you actually picking the person to fill the seat directly. And of course, Chuck, those races were usually the central committee races, which are up on the primary ballots for both parties, both the Republicans and the Democrats. If you voted independent, you didn't see any of this because you only vote on issues.
That's right.
If you pull an independent ballot, because primaries are and have always been for the purpose of party affiliated voters to be able to go and choose whom they want to carry that party's banner in the specific election in the general in November. And they are not for, I really like so-and-so and I want him to win, or I don't like so-and-so, so I'm going to go over to the other side and vote for this person. The primaries are supposed to be for the operation of each political party. If you remember, Chuck, there was one time here not too long ago under Secretary of State Jennifer Bruner that when you walked into the primary, you could pull a Republican ballot, a Democratic ballot, an independent ballot, which was issues only, or you could pull a ballot for the Green Party, for the Natural Law Party, for the Constitution Party, or for the Libertarian Party, because it was at that point in time during Frau Bruner's Secretary of Stateship that she opened up the door to allow certain third parties who had met certain threshold requirements to be able to run their own party's primary voters through their own primary ballots.
And the reason she did that was because it would provide a political advantage to her particular political party at the given time.
Well, absolutely. But, you know, it was one of the first faint glimmer, which has then since been subsumed,
thoroughly crushed. Let's say thoroughly quenched.
Yeah, that ember has been doused in the bottom depths of the ocean of politics. To something you and I talk about all the time, and that is, wouldn't it be great if Ohio awarded our electoral delegates in the November election and our primary delegates in those primary elections on a proportional basis? If you win in that particular congressional district, you win that number of electors or that number of delegates to your party's convention. You and I have talked about a long time how that would bring more balance into the mix. It would open up the door for minor parties to be able to actually play in Ohio. But again, the two major parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, don't want anything to do with that. Because that may shake up their delicate balance that they place between the two parties, you know, where one party says, hey, we want these people to win, and the other party says, hey, we want these people to win. Hey, I got an idea. How about we don't run people in the general against each other in these races so that we can get what we want? And then we'll fight out over the margins over some of these other seats to figure out who actually has control.
Well, of course, the machinations inside the party get more and more and more and more complex as the voters become more and more and more and more dissatisfied with the process.
Yes.
When in fact, what should be happening is if a party is attempting to keep its electorate happy, it should be, okay, saying, yes, we need to simplify this. Yes, we need to make changes here. Yes, we need to make this more representative. In fact, because it's a situation where party leaders will be losing their power base inside the party, they're getting very creative in creating the rules in which they can maintain their party base and maintain their candidate structure without actually going to the rank and file members of the party for any kind of approval. And in fact, closing out the rank and file members, because after all, they don't really understand how this is all supposed to work. I mean, that's the bottom line of what this is all about. The rank and file really just don't understand how this is all supposed to work.
That's always been a party mantra of, well, you just don't understand. This is
right.
We've got a process here, and you don't understand it. And we're going to see this play out even this year, Chuck. I mean, if you look at it, again, as people know from the Tuesday, the Ohio primary was held, and not a huge surprise to most people, but John Kasich won the Ohio primary for a presidential ballot on the Republican ticket, and Hillary Clinton won the Democrat side. But what you did find, Chuck, if you looked at those ballots, were some interesting things. First and foremost, and I think you and I were talking about this offline, you know, right now the Ohio Republican Party and John Kasich's handlers are touting how wonderful, you know, historically, for the third election cycle in a row, John Kasich has, you know, won the state. You know, he's won the statewide contest three times in a row. Well, Chuck, he only won with 46% of the vote.
Exactly. I kept hearing about how hugely popular he was, and I go, well, this hugely popular Republican won with 46% of the Republican ballots cast. That means that 54% of the Republicans who pulled ballots wanted nothing to do with John Kasich.
Well, that seems to be the case. And the other option that you saw, and I saw this in a couple of articles yet this morning before we came on to tape, is that, you know, if you looked at turnout numbers, Chuck, and I was looking at one specifically, and this was in Delaware County, which is just north of Columbus, that there were supposedly 28,000 registered Republicans in Delaware County. But the number of Republican ballots that were pulled and cast in Delaware County were 51,000. So what it seems to be is that a number of the folks who historically either didn't vote at all or B, voted in an independent ballot, i.e. they only voted on issues if they came to a primary election, or C, because of the way Ohio's primary process is, you can walk up to your polling place, to your poll workers, and you can request whichever ballot you want. And a number of Democrats were requesting Republican ballots in this election. And that holds out because if you look at the numbers for Democrat turnout in the same county, they were significantly lower than they had been in the past. So what you had, Chuck, was a number of Democrats who were crossing party lines to pull a Republican ballot. Now, some of these Democrats, and I think in one sense it was union Democrats, were pulling ballots for Donald Trump because that's the audience that he has really been resonating with when he talks about building walls and stopping immigration. You know, union workers understand what that means for them. And so they're starting to, and that's the reason why, you know, Bernie Sanders on the Democrat side seems to be pulling some union support. And definitely Donald Trump's pulling heavy union support. But an interesting analysis showed that at least 1 in 11 of each of those Democrats who pulled a ballot in the Republican Party voted for John Kasich. And so here you have John Kasich, whose winning coalition on Tuesday was an amalgam of party establishment Republicans in Ohio who have something to gain by keeping the governor happy. You have independents who probably, many of them, were concerned about the Donald Trump effect. You Democrats who came across to vote for John Kasich, because you remember in New Hampshire, Kasich announced that, you know, he was so popular among Democrats, he could be a Democrat. And there's truth to that, of course.
Right.
And what you also had, and this is the one that just worries me to no end, you had Republicans who supported Ted Cruz or someone else who pulled a ballot and voted for John Kasich because of their fear of Donald Trump being the nominee. And I know this to be a fact because I heard it from people. I saw it on my Facebook feed. Well, you know, I really support Ted Cruz, but I pulled the ballot for John Kasich because Donald Trump can't be our nominee. Well, Chuck, that's honestly, that's not just wasting your vote. That's criminal. That's almost criminal intent with your vote. To vote against somebody and take a vote away from the person who you support in order to vote against somebody else. It doesn't make any sense. Now, what made even less sense was, and this happened, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to name names, but Chuck knows who I'm talking about. When I had a fairly well-known member of the social conservative leadership in Ohio come up to me at an event over the weekend and earnestly look at me and say, "We've got to go vote for Donald Trump on Tuesday." And I looked at the person and I said, "Have you lost your mind? No, we got to keep John Kasich from winning and making it a contested convention." Chuck, that was the logic model right there.
And
we
got to
go
that.
Pull that. And Donald Trump, some of his support came from people like that who understood they had to go pull that ballot for Donald Trump in order to keep John Kasich from being able to jury rig the Republican National Convention, which is going to take place in Cleveland in July.
Which is why Cruz came in such a distant third place.
Right. Cruz came in because many of those people, those same social conservatives, were Cruz supporters.
That's right.
But who, Chuck, it just reminded me of the scripture reference that says that a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. Because double-mindedness is forgetting that God is sovereignly in control of all things, and that he puts up kings and he takes down kings, and he calls us to pray for kings and those who are in authority. And also in Exodus 18, he tells us to choose among yourselves this day those whom you will serve. And he gives us a list. He says that they should be people who fear God, who hate covetousness, and who speak truth. Now, let me ask you a question. Given what you know about the candidates right now, would Donald Trump meet those biblical requirements for elected office?
Not hardly.
Not hard. Would John Kasich?
No.
He might get a little closer. I mean, if you believed his rhetoric about, you know, St. Peter and you know, Medicaid being a Christian thing to do, maybe you would buy into that. And Ted Cruz, you know, you could say, yeah, okay. Yeah, and even Marco Rubio you could make a case for. But Donald Trump, can you really make a case, a biblically consistent case, that you are following the commands of God, that you are honoring God in what he says when he gives us that ability to choose among ourselves men who fear God, holding to truth and hating covetousness, that you, when you cast a vote for Donald Trump because you're afraid John Kasich might control the convention, are you fearing God or are you fearing man?
That's an excellent point. And one of the things that people get so worked up about in politics, they forget that the Proverbs 21, the heart of the king is in the hands of the Lord. So what does that mean? Well, what it means is that God is in control. No matter what's going on, God is in control. If you're getting things that you don't like in the country you live in, it's because God has essentially decreed that you're going to basically, you as a nation are going to be under some form of judgment because of the way the nation is acting. I mean, why wouldn't God judge us at this point, Barry? We continue to have abortion on demand. We come out and find out that Planned Parenthood and groups like it are selling baby parts openly.
Yes, absolutely.
Committing abortions for profit, and let's not let the nonprofit designation be any kind of impediment to talking about that, because being nonprofit doesn't mean you don't make a profit. It means you plow your profit back into different activities rather than distributing the profits. That's what makes a nonprofit, not the fact that you don't make a profit. The fact is they're making a profit on not only doing the abortions and doing it with women who are usually in dire straits, but not always. Sometimes they're just, for whatever reason, they've decided they don't want to be pregnant. And they're selling the spare parts. We essentially force them to come out and say, well, yes, we did. We had to apply techniques used by 60 Minutes style journalism. In other words, by surreptitiously recording conversations with people in which this is discussed. But we do nothing. When it comes time to actually defund Planned Parenthood, nothing gets done. Because, I mean, even Donald Trump is really weak on this. Really, really, really weak on this. Well, they do all this other good work. No, Planned Parenthood does not do all this other good work. In fact, they farm it out. That's the dirty, ugly secret. And yet, we can't get anybody to talk about this. We can't get the job done to defund them. And in fact, outlaw them from doing these things, and yet we expect God's blessing. Not going to happen. And that's not the only, that's probably the most obvious and blatant example. God provides. He has provision. He gives us the things that we have. And suddenly we say, well, God's provision isn't good enough. We have to redistribute God's provision. And we do it on both sides of the aisle. On the left side, it's simple confiscation and redistribution of wealth. On the right side, it's corporate welfare, so we could have trickle-down economics. In other words, we're giving corporations the largesse from the public coffers and awarding contracts to cronies, as if crony capitalism was some kind of moral imperative. Sorry, guys, that's not biblical on either side. And that's what we've got going. I mean, it's essentially Socialist Party A versus Socialist Party B.
Not,
yeah.
Absolutely not.
Chuck,
that's probably part of the problem that, we had in Ohio is, had all of these situations going on. You've got candidates who honestly don't give you great choices in being able. Now, that's where I think Trump supporters think that they're getting such a wonderful choice with Donald Trump, because he's talking back and he's talking tough and he's fighting back. But, let's be honest, Donald Trump's one of the consummate insiders. He uses his wealth and his money in order to buy political influence. Just ask Hillary Clinton, who receives an awful lot of money from Trump's foundation to the Clinton Foundation. Don't think that there are political paybacks for that.
Just to let everybody know, if you hear something funny, it's because we're on Skype.
And the other thing that happened in Ohio, Chuck, was that we had a number of races where you had conservative challengers going up against entrenched incumbents, especially in the Ohio Senate races, our state Senate races. Sadly enough, none of those really came out with the conservative winning the race. It seems the establishment, if people crossed lines and came out of independency to vote for Donald Trump, there wasn't much down ticket push for anybody else who was a non-establishment person. And we saw that happen kind of across the board. Now, I want to also talk about some of the other races that were on the Ohio ballot on Tuesday, because what you saw, again, with all these crossover votes, whether it be Democrat or Independents coming and pulling Republican ballots, that there wasn't much bleed out down ticket. You didn't see people who were Donald Trump supporters who really were against the establishment and wanted a change voting against incumbents, because we had a number of incumbents on the ballot across the state who are being challenged by conservatives. And they won handily, the incumbents did, whether it was Dave Joyce up in the 14th Congressional District in Northeast Ohio, who survived a second challenge from conservative Matt Lynch and survived it by a vote of 65-35, or whether it was Larry Obhoff, who's the state senator who was just appointed as the president pro tem of the Senate and who is arguably next in line for the Senate presidency, holding off a challenge from conservative activist Janet Folger Porter, Faith to Action, who also won 65-35 against Porter, or whether it was Matt Huffman, who is a consummate political insider, the former president pro tem of the House, running for Keith Faber's open Senate seat against conservative hero John Adams. And Adams also lost that race spectacularly to Matt Huffman.
Well, I think that's too bad. What
you saw was the Ohio Republican Party spending a boatload of money to run ads and television and other things to attack these conservatives and to distort their records if they had a record or their positions if they didn't have a record. And Chuck, I'm no stranger to that. I ran an outsider challenge campaign against an incumbent senator 2 years ago where the party did exactly the same thing. They sent out slick mailers in the last 24 hours of the election that basically misrepresented and, in fact, lied to the voters in order to keep their incumbent in their comfy little seat. And I think you saw that across the board, that the Ohio Republican Party, and probably helped by John Kasich and his party machine, supported people that the party wanted to keep in power, and we saw that. But there were a few that were won. There were a few seats that there were too many seats for them to play in entirely, and so there were a few that they lost. And one of the big, even though it seems like a small thing, but one of the big seats that got lost was that Franklin County Republican Party chairman and Kasich inner circle winner, Doug Price, who is one of Kasich's three top advisors, lost his re-election to the State Central Committee by a Tea Party challenger by the name of Jim Burgess, who you and I both know. And Jim actually put on a great campaign and worked door-to-door, and he beat Doug Price. And this is significant because Doug Price is one of the architects of John Kasich's presidential run.
Yeah.
And so even in that very local area, there were a lot of people who just said, I think enough's enough here. And so you will not have Doug Price on the State Republican Central Committee. Now, I'm sure he's still a delegate to Kasich's presidential ambitions. And he will still, doesn't mean he's out of politics in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
And Jim Burgess will probably be treated like a complete pariah until they can knock him off in 2 years. Or if they try to disqualify him after the election by some technicality. So we're still waiting to see what that happens.
Well, of course, and then they'll appoint Doug Price to sit in the spot. This is the way this works. It's sort of like, well, the voice of the voters must be heard, and then after a turd, it must be ignored. This is pretty typical, and congratulations to Jim Burgess. He's a Tea Party guy. I used to go relatively regularly to the Westerville Tea Party, and he was always there and was always very active there. And unfortunately, I've been able to go just because of conflicts, for quite a while. We were teaching a class on the night. We were teaching a constitution class. And by the way, folks, we really want to set up a new constitution class. And Barry and I'd be more than willing to come out and all around Central Ohio, all around Southeast Ohio, and teach a class on the U.S. Constitution, Institute on the Constitution. It's a great class. You and I haven't taught it now for around a year. We've had a couple of classes yanked out from under our feet. We lose a venue. We lose, we think we have things all set up. We get ready to go to the thing, and don't come because the room was yanked out from under our feet. That's happened a lot, and it has to do with churches who are somehow listening to very strange voices that really should have no say in church activities, like Warren Throckmorton over at Grove City College, who purports to be a conservative and is not. In fact, is involved with a group called Right Wing Watch and used to be very solid on social conservative issues and has since turned coat and gone 180 degrees and it's suddenly pro-homosexual marriage and that kind of thing. And Throckmorton continues to be looked upon as some kind of a guru for some reason that I don't fully understand, Barry, and maybe you do, but I have an idea you're a little perplexed as well.
Well, no, actually, Chuck, you know, I'm kind of looking at it as I think God's giving us a sabbatical year. I think that we're allowed to take this time off because we've plowed that ground for a while and we've trained a lot of good people and we've seen some fruit out of it. We've had, like you said, Jim Burgess and we've had others who've run for office who are starting to win, utilizing their understanding of the Constitution. I've had a couple of my students who've actually run and won and now are reelected and are looking, and at least one of them is looking again to be reelected to the West Virginia State Legislature. And we know if anybody's been paying attention, the West Virginia Legislature turned to Republican hands and have been passing numerous bills that are solidly conservative, whether it be pro-life bills, constitutional carry, right to work. West Virginia is on fire right now. And what it took was just, getting people in there who are committed to reestablishing the old boundaries that their forefathers had set. And Chuck, we've done this all over the state. We've taught classes. And yes, you're right, we have some issues sometimes when people get misinformation and they make bad decisions. Whether it's Warren Throckmorton or whether it's, the Southern Poverty Law Center coming up with some, cockamamie and outrageous idea that because we're teaching the original intent of the Constitution and we're actually showing you documents and quotes from founders that you've never heard before, that somehow we are engaging in some kind of racist and or hate-filled attack against the government. And a lot of Christian pastors, and usually we teach these classes in churches, a lot of Christian pastors aren't dialed in to what's going on really around them in the culture or know enough about our Christian history to know that these attacks are by and large specious. Or they'll be personal attacks against an individual. Well, he was associated with such and such. Well, Chuck, if we wanted to look back, they could go back to our grade school days and say, well, we were associated with this person who then went on to be this bad person.
That's right.
So therefore, because you had one class with him in kindergarten, therefore you're tainted. And that's the kind of silliness that these groups get into when they try to character assassinate because they can't really attack your message.
Right.
They attack the messenger, not the message. So I look at this time as I think, and you've had business upheavals and now a move to your new digs. I've had a burgeoning client base that's keeping me busy, and I both would love to get back in the saddle and teach these things, but we've got to have willing people who want to learn. And folks, it's up to you guys. It's up to the listeners. If you want to learn more about our Christian history, if you want to learn more about the true nature of our government, if you want to learn more about how our Constitution actually is supposed to work and why it's a marvelous piece of paper that our founders put together for us and is based on biblical principles, and that, yes, even today you can use it to help take back the control of our governmental systems, you've got to step up. We're going to do our end. We'll teach it.
If you want to run it, you got to understand it. Because
that's right. If you're going to run, if you want to run the government, you got to understand how it's supposed to operate, not how you're told it's supposed to operate.
That's the bottom
by
line.
The party power structures.
Look. Here's the bottom line. You're being told that things are supposed to work a certain way, and you can't really step into leadership until you understand. If you understand how the system's supposed to work, then you understand how you're being manipulated. And once you understand how you're being manipulated, then you can understand how to combat that manipulation. And that's exactly what we teach. We simply teach the way the whole mechanism was designed to work. Now we can sit around and get caught in peripheral issues about candidates and that kind of thing. Barry, when was the last time when we taught this class that we ever talked about a candidate? I mean, somebody might ask us a question, and we'll give our free opinion. But this class isn't about candidates. It's about how you learn how the system is supposed to work so you can judge a candidate, not have you and I come in and say, well, we think that you should do it this way. Because we don't do that.
Right. No, we basically say this is the way our founders set this up. This is how this provision of the Constitution works with this provision of the Constitution. This is where it's being abused in our political system and in our governing system. And this is how you can utilize this document as a tool in order to fight back. And so that's what we're talking about. But Chuck, again, we'll do the hard, heavy lifting of teaching the class and providing the materials. What we need to do is for our listeners, if you really want this information, you've got to, all you have to do is find a location and guarantee at least a dozen students who will be willing to come and sign up for this class. Chuck, you know, I know going into the fall, I'm going to be teaching it at a homeschool co-op in my area because, as a matter of fact, in 2 weeks, I'm going to be doing a presentation before them. They've lined up and they've got some funding to be able to put this together to pay for it for their students. And so we're going to be, I know I'm going to be teaching it in the fall one way or the other. Lord willing, if I'm still around. And, you know, we're hoping that, you know, while we're coming into our spring season here, of course, Chuck, that means that, you know, right now it's middle of March. So if somebody really wants to get this done, they're going to have to schedule a class ASAP because in the middle of June, you and I are going to be a little bit busy with a little thing called Camp America.
That's right. So if you want to know more about our classes, and what it is we do, if you're tuning in and you're like, who are these two clowns? Go to www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. If you want to know about more about Camp American, which is coming up. And by the way, I'm getting ready to do some heavy work on Camp American. So I'm petitioning God for an extra 3 or 4 hours in the day so I can have time to do some of this stuff. But go to www.campamerican.com. That's campamerican.com. And we used to be Camp America. .com and or .org, I think, and believe it or not, we had the name. We got a trademark infringement, not from a commercial activity, but from a United States government agency. We used to be called Camp America, and the United States Information Agency sued us for using their name. And what were they doing with this Camp America? Well, they were bringing in migrant children and sticking them in day camps and that kind of thing. And we used to get all kinds of angry emails at Camp American from all these foreign students who had come here and worked during the summer, and the USIA had promised them this and this and this and this, and they didn't get any of it. So we'd get these angry emails, and we're sort of like, you got to actually contact the United States Information Agency, who, believe me, we have no contact with whatsoever. We have nothing to do with the United States Information Agency or the State Department. Believe me, they wish we were gone. And they made us gone, so we switched from Camp America to a Camp American. And it's actually a better name. So yes, there you go. But it's www.campamerican.com.
Excellent. And that camp this year, if you're interested in going, you can check out at the website. Camp dates this year are June the 12th through June the 18th. We come in on a Sunday evening, and we go through and we release students back home on Saturday, like midday, or like, you know, right around noon. So, you know, it's going to be a full week. Chuck, I don't know who all you've got speaking yet or lined up or not. I think that you're going to be speaking this year, and guessing I am too.
Guess what, Barry? Every 4 years I teach a class on the Electoral College because there's so few people who really understand how it works.
This year.
Yeah, how it works and how it's supposed to work, that every summer of a presidential election year, I teach a class on the Electoral College, and I will be teaching that class.
Okay. Well, Chuck, and I think it's very important this year because, you know, people are asking a lot of questions. You know, we talked about these races and things. And they're asking, you know, because we've had, you know, when you and I started talking about this a while back, there were at least 17 recognized candidates for the Republican nomination. And over that time, people like Rick Perry and Bobby Jindal and Scott Walker and Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum and all have all dropped off, Lindsey Graham and others have all dropped off the map on this, have withdrawn from their candidacies, including, you know, the most latest two, Dr. Ben Carson, and then after Tuesday's debacle with Florida, Senator Marco Rubio has announced his withdrawal. And the question was raised to us by another party. What happens to their delegates if they won delegates? Because, you know, both Ben Carson and Marco Rubio actually had won delegates in the run-ups to this last Tuesday because of winning or placing over a certain threshold in certain states' primaries or caucuses. And so, Chuck, that gets us into talking about the Republican National Convention, which, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be taking place in July. I think it's the third weekend in July in Cleveland, Ohio. I think it's going to be very interesting, Chuck, because already people are, you know, the part of the reason John Kasich is so confident that, you know, he's in play, even though he's only got, I think, maybe 130 delegates, I think, is what he's got total. Even winning Ohio and all 66 of his delegates as a winner-take-all state, he's only sitting at 130, where, you know, Donald Trump is sitting at 661 and Ted Cruz is sitting at over 500. And he still thinks that he's going to be a key player. Well, it's because the convention, number one being in Cleveland, but number two, that because of the way the convention rules are going to be written. John Kasich kind of has an in, number one, that he's now, if you really want to take a look at it, he's now the only establishment Republican left in the race, which benefits him with the establishment who's setting up the RNC convention. But secondly, because his political mentor and early guide, Joanne Davidson, who was the former Speaker of the Ohio House and also the former vice chairwoman of the Republican National Committee, is the co-chairwoman of the Arrangements Committee of the Republican National Committee. Now, the Arrangements Committee are the folks who set the rules and regulations for the convention. Now, when your political mentor is the co-chair, possibly because, but there are people, there are at least one delegate from each of the 50 states on this committee. Now, we already know who one of the delegates is from Ohio. It's Matt Borges, who's the state party chairman, who John Kasich personally arranged to get put into his place and voted in order to oust the then current party chairman, Kevin DeWine. So here you have your political mentor, who is the co-chair of the main committee, the most powerful committee in the RNC and the convention. You have your state party chairman on the committee as a vote and as a sounding board. No wonder John Kasich's smiling big, like the kid who got in the cookie jar without getting caught. You know, he thinks he can go into the convention, and because he won Ohio, because, you know, the old adage, Chuck, that if you have to win Ohio as a Republican in order to win the presidency, he now controls the key to Ohio. And so at the very least, and what I consider to be John Kasich's political mental calculations, at the very least, he's guaranteed himself an inside shot at a vice presidential nod on a nominee on one of the tickets, whether it be a Donald Trump ticket, although he says he'd never run with Donald Trump. Remember, he's a politician. What he says today and what the situation is tomorrow may be entirely 180 degrees opposed to each other. But he could also, you know, in a remote world, if Ted Cruz becomes the top ticket, he could try to broker to become Ted Cruz's vice presidential nominee. Or if the rumors are starting to bubble up and start becoming more true, that there is a coterie of big money folks who are persuading Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives now, and the former vice presidential candidate under Mitt Romney 4 years ago, that they're persuading Paul Ryan to come in, and if the convention is a contested or a brokered convention, for him to throw his hat in the ring as a consensus candidate. And John Kasich could run with Paul Ryan. But the one thing I don't think John Kasich can do, Chuck, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is in any way, shape, or form get any of these other people to give him their delegates in order for him to be the nominee.
Well, you know, I have to laugh about this Ryan thing, because Ryan has come out and said, under no circumstances would I be the presidential candidate nominee. Well, if you'll recall, he said, under no circumstances would I become Speaker of the House of the United States, you know, the House of Representatives of the United States of America.
Thank you, Chuck. I'm glad you brought that up, because that just proves my point. these are politicians, folks. What they say one day may be changed by circumstances the next.
Yeah, it really doesn't impress me much. Would he like to be the guy? Look, Mitt Romney claims he's not running either, and he wouldn't accept it, except he's already done exploratory work. He's got people out there doing exploratory work for him stepping in and being the white horse candidate.
Well, according to a couple of news reports, and I think one of them was from Politico, not only is he exploring it, Chuck, he's actually filed the preliminary paperwork with the Federal Elections Commission, the FEC, for a presidential run. So there is Romney for president, and they had an actual PDF copy of that filing that was filed last month, you know, when Romney first started attacking Donald Trump. Again, folks, this doesn't come out of the blue, and it isn't because he's a patriotic Republican and he hates what Donald Trump's doing to the party. It's because Mitt Romney is trying to triangulate how he can get back in.
Well, of course it is, Barry. I mean, these ambitions just don't go away. You don't run for president unless – I mean, let me ask you a question. Would you run for this job?
For president of the United States, absolutely not.
Yeah, exactly. You have to have there's a bit of ego involved. There's a bit of you have to have a lot of self-confidence in your ability to do the job. And the fact is, Mitt Romney still thinks that he should have been the guy in the last election. Now, the fact that most Republicans disagreed with that. And in fact, stayed home, or not most Republicans, but a significant number stayed home and said, no, thank you very much. Again, there's not a dime's worth of difference between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. And they were correct. Now, what do I mean by that? What I mean is that Romney's record did not match his rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
And again, where have we seen that before? That's a common disease, as you and I are well aware. But he still thinks that he could do the job. And the big plan here is, you know, to talk about uniting the country. And one of the reasons that some of these politicians, you know, for instance, I saw an apologia for Marco Rubio. What a shame. He, you know, all he did in the Senate, he got in trouble because he tried to get in there and unite the Senate. Well, he tried to unite them around the things that were the direct opposite of what got him elected. He ran on a certain platform, and then he got into the Senate, and he quote unquote grew in office. In other words, whenever you hear that a candidate or a Supreme Court justice has quote unquote grown in office, what that means is that's code word for they've become more liberal. They've become more left-leaning. So what happened was Cruz used the Tea Party to get in. And then the minute he got to the pinnacle of power, he did what happened in Russia during the Russian Revolution. As soon as the Bolsheviks got to the pinnacle of power, they said thank you very much and kicked all the other coalition parties off. So basically, Rubio simply did a time-honored political thing, and he threw the Tea Party under the bus. The same can be said for, where is she from? New Hampshire, Kelly Ayotte. The same can be said for Nikki Haley in South Carolina. The same can be said for numerous of these people. They used the Tea Party to get in, and they used people like Sarah Palin to help get them elected. And then as soon as they get in, they abandon the principle. And that's why most people resent the heck out of Marco Rubio.
Yep, absolutely.
And not just Marco Rubio, but a whole list of rhino Republican in name only candidates. And one of those is John Kasich. Now, you know, what one of the things that the election in Ohio, the primary election showed was that Ohio is not a conservative state. It has a strong conservative leaning, but we're not conservative. We're a GOP establishment state, and we are a moderate state. Moderate meaning basically liberal.
Right.
That's how you get people like Matt Huffman beating John Adams. Now, Matt Huffman, for the most part, is an okay guy. He's got strange ideas on a number of things, one of them being a constitutional convention. He thinks that'd be a great idea. And I've had conversations with him at meetings where I gave presentations in which I destroyed the position of the pro convention. In fact, the chairman of the Ohio group that was pushing it the hardest, still is pushing it the hardest, the heavily laden with money. They have a professional manager to get the thing through the legislature, this call for a new convention. And Matt Huffman was at a meeting, and he says, you know, you testified about this in front of my committee. And I said, well, I didn't say this to him. I said, yes, I remember, and I gave a lot of the same arguments. And what I didn't say, I left unspoken, because it's unnecessary, because he already knew it. And I said, because you ignored me then as you're ignoring me now.
Right.
And he's not the only one. And John Adams got the picture. He said, yes, I understand what you're saying, and your arguments trump the other ones. Now, does that mean that, you know, you always think you're right if you're presenting an argument. However, nobody's presented anything that made me think that my argument was incorrect in any way.
Exactly.
And that's the problem. A lot of these guys come in with a preconceived notion, and it becomes don't confuse me with facts. And again, this is why we're dealing with these revolts in the Republican Party, because the electorate is being ignored in favor of, we can't do that because our donor class wouldn't like it. And
exactly.
What you're seeing now is a repudiation of the donor class. You know, I think Ann Coulter just wrote an article that says, you know, this is basically the Republican rank and file telling the donor class to go away and don't come back.
Right. Now, you know, Chuck, there are an awful lot of fault lines, I guess you could say.
Yes.
That could create huge rifts, and also possibly be the breakup of the Republican Party, whether it's the Donald Trump phenomenon and the campaign, whether it's a brokered convention and the party establishment trying to engineer Donald out of the nomination if he's that close. And he very well could be when they go into July. He could end up coming in there with, you know, needing only about 70 delegates in order to win. You know, there are an awful lot of scenarios that could happen. One of the other scenarios doesn't even involve the presidential race, but it does involve what's going on around the president, and that is that the Barack Obama has named his nominee to fill Justice Antonin Scalia's empty spot on the United States Supreme Court. He's introduced a jurist from the D.C. Circuit. That should be your first red flag.
Yes.
Conservative, by the name of Merrick B. Garland. Who supposedly is a centrist. And, of course, Chuck, centrist means the same thing as moderate means liberal.
Yes.
And the New York Times has even run a huge article today saying that a Supreme Court with Merrick Garland on it would be the most liberal in decades. Now, I'll guarantee you, Charles, that, you know, right now, Mitch McConnell, who's the Senate Majority Leader, is out there making the right noises about how we're not going to consider Obama's nominee. But he's not the only person out there, because you and I talked about this the other day. Senator Orrin Hatch, who is a key person on the Senate Judiciary Committee, is already starting to sound the retreat drum.
Well, yeah. Look, Orrin Hatch is one of these guys that can be counted upon to, quote-unquote, reach across the aisle. And what that means is that Orrin Hatch is establishment to the hilt. And what that means is we don't want to embarrass the Republican Party by failing. You know, we're not going to be like the Democrats. We're going to give the president his nominees. Well, look, you're going to replace a staunch constitutional conservative. And by that, I don't mean politically conservative. I mean a guy who basically took an originalist position with an activist liberal. And Orrin Hatch is okay with that, because after all, the president, you know, the current president is blah, blah, blah. That's not what advice and consent was all about constitutionally. Advice and consent was just that. The senators were supposed to advise the president on who should be sitting on the court. And in fact, that's why you'll see when a Supreme Court nominee is introduced to the Senate for ratification, and for the hearing process, he will have a Senate sponsor.
Yes, absolutely.
Because that's part of the advice and consent mechanism. Now, it's been turned into ceremonial, and it's very telling. If you, I wanted to get this in before I forgot about it. It's very telling that Barack Obama thinks that Merrick Garland would be acceptable to Republicans as a, quote-unquote, a centrist. This guy is extremely far left, actually. Again, as you pointed out, D.C. Circuit. But he's far more to the right than some of the other people that Barack Obama was considering. I mean, he was considering some ultra-radicals.
Well, you know, and if you read from the New York Times, and I've got a piece that they pulled up here, they basically said that even though Garland is considered a centrist jurist, his appointment to the seat left by Justice Antonin Scalia would result in a historic change in the court. And they go on to say that his addition would make the justice at the center of the court more liberal than at any point in nearly 50 years. And it gets down here and says, well, we don't know yet exactly how Mr. Garland would vote if he joined the court, but scholars believe that he will be substantially more liberal than Justice Scalia was. Well, that's not a hard pitch. It says, according to a ranking of Supreme Court and appeals court judges, Mr. Garland is expected to be ideologically similar to Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor, President Obama's previous picks for the court. So if that gives you any idea, we're going to have another Elena Kagan or Sonia Sotomayor on the court. It's interesting, Chuck, that the Republicans in the Senate, whether it's Orrin Hatch or whether it's, you name it, Mitch McConnell, John Cornyn, Rob Portman, would even remotely want to consider, having this nominee, even hold hearings. Because what they're basically saying is, we give up. You know, we're not going to fight. We're not going to fight to hold the ideological line against Barack Obama's progressive liberal puts. We are going to fall in line, and we're going to comply. And I believe, Chuck, that if nothing else pushes us, the combined weight of a potential broker convention and the Trumpites leaving the party and a complete abandonment or betrayal by Mitch McConnell and or by Paul Ryan if he jumps into the presidential mix when he said he wouldn't. I think what you're going to see is that 2016 may be and go down in the history books as the year that the Republican Party imploded.
Yeah, self-destructed.
Self-destructed.
Yep.
And I'm sure that the establishment is like saying, oh, you know, look, we won here. Look at the primaries. We won all these seats. We're doing just fine. Well, you know, Chuck, take away the independents who came across to vote for Donald Trump or to vote against Donald Trump. Take away the Democrats who came across to vote for or against a lightning rod candidate. And take away the social conservatives who the Republicans count on to vote down ticket for their recognized candidates, by and large, because you and I both know that there are a number of social conservatives who will buy into it. You know, I know full well, and I'm sitting here, even though I know a number of social conservative organizations endorsed this individual, and this individual won their primary for a state court seat, my gut tells me, from looking at the people who came around this individual, which included party officials like Joanne Davidson, that we're going to be sorely disappointed when this person starts issuing opinions on the state court. But that's okay. They supported him. They voted for him. Won the nomination. Going to run in November. Probably will win the seat because the Democrats don't seem to be able to put up anybody who can win a Supreme Court seat now for the last 20 years. But, you know, I'm sitting back and saying, just wait. Just wait. Because sometimes you can see it. Because remember, a person's character is shaped by the books they read and the people they meet, right? People who come around them.
Yeah.
So I'm not really comfortable, but the party seems to think that if we come around the folks, then they're going to be okay. And many times, you know, because of the weight of their power, the weight of their money resources and their ability to, shall we say, play fast and loose with ethics when it comes to accurately representing their candidate or accurately going after the opposition to their candidate. There are a lot of places, but I think, honestly, if you build all this stuff together, People were upset. Well, the reason why John Boehner is no longer either Speaker of the House or in Congress whatsoever is because the voters of his district got fed up with him. They got fed up with business as usual, establishment politics. I can't be touched, and I'm going to do whatever I want, which includes capitulating to the leftist Democrat Barack Obama. And John Boehner is gone. And as a matter of fact, that's one big glare. That's one big light, Chuck, because the winner of that primary to take John Boehner's seat wasn't the establishment guy. It was a businessman by the name of Warren Davidson, out of the eastern part of that district, who, with a coalition of pastors and grassroots activists, won not only the race to fill the unexpired term of John Boehner, but also won walking away, mind you, by about 9 points against the next closest establishment Republican, the right to run in November for the full term coming next year. Voters in that district decided that they wanted an outsider who was consistently conservative and, by the way, also is Christian, in order to basically end the nightmare of the Boehner era. Remember, in that district, Boehner had handpicked somebody
right.
who shortly thereafter had to step out because they started understanding that they would never, ever be allowed to have their own thinking. They'd be like guided by the machine. The then next party favorite is someone who I know personally and who is a wonderful human being and just does not have any backbone to stand up to pressure. That person didn't sell the voters, sold his own local county party, won that endorsement, but didn't sell the voters of the larger district that he could be someone who would fight for them in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
But Warren Davidson, a former Army Ranger and entrepreneurial business owner, came through and I think is going to very well, he's easily going to win the special general in June to finish filling out the term for Boehner. And he's also probably going to handily win November to be the next congressman from the 8th Ohio Congressional District, where he will likely join the House Freedom Caucus as a member. So the voters, many voters, when they get together, can beat the party. It's just that what happens is, Chuck, that they're in so many little pockets, and there's lack of coordination. And I think that's really what it gets down to
yeah.
is the conservative, whether it's the Tea Party groups who are splintered right now, I'll give you that, Chuck, because in Ohio especially, you have Tea Party leadership who are supporting Donald Trump completely, and you have Tea Party leadership who are supporting Ted Cruz completely, and you have Tea Party leadership who are looking at both sides saying, wait a minute, why are we at odds here, you know?
Yep.
So, yeah. So they're having a crisis of identity right now. And, of course, they ran candidates, and very few of those Tea Party-backed candidates, other than Jim Burgess, who we talked about, won on Tuesday to fill seats, whether it was at Central Committee level or whether it was to take on or to knock off an incumbent in a state-level seat.
Yeah.
They just didn't have it put together. And I think that's part of the problem is because... Well, you know what? If I go as a Tea Party person and I don't like the establishment, but my Tea Party is telling me to vote for, you know, XYZ, I may go into the ballot and say, you know what? I'm just going to go in here and vote president, and I'm going to walk away from everything else.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to go in there and say, well, I'm going to vote, but, you know, well, I recognize this person's name, but I don't know anything about this other person because there was nothing put out about them. There was no material. I have no idea where we stand on this person, so I'm going to pass on it.
Yeah,
and it's sad because I think there were a lot of good people on Tuesday who should, you know, continue to move forward trying to win, who just couldn't because they had no structure support around them.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're out of time, Barry. We do want to ask our listeners to consider coming to the Relationships Under Construction Banquet. April 21st on a Thursday. Please come out and support a great group. If you want to know more, www.relationshipsunderconstruction.com. That's relationshipsunderconstruction.com. We are going to run an ad. I think you'll hear an ad embedded into this show. So, and you'll hear on WLRY throughout the week and throughout the weeks coming up to the banquet. Again, if you know what we think, we want to know what you think, visit us at www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.
What we do to girls in America is just sick. You put so much pressure on yourself. The world puts so much pressure on yourself because you're trying to look like Britney and J-Lo. Ashanti, you're trying to look like Hollywood. Let me tell you something, girls. You're beautiful just the way you are.
Keith Del Tano, teen relationships expert, will be speaking at the RUC Fundraising Banquet on April 21st at the Villa Milano Restaurant. Make your reservations today at relationshipsunderconstruction.com. Adults only.